Hey, in our podcast, we've been talking about the Baal for weeks now and his influence in American culture, but we're going to talk about his mistress, Ashtoreth, today, because it's interesting how the work of Baal and the work of Ashtoreth, even in the Bible, go hand in glove. We're going to see how apostasy and how living for unbridled, you know, success and affluence and wealth, how that can turn quickly into a full embrace of all type of sexual perversion. America has been a case study in this, and we're going to go back and look at how everything began in ancient Israel, and what's happened in ancient Israel is we are now following the very same pattern today in American culture. I think you're going to find this very fascinating. We hope you'll tune in today.
Hey, welcome to the Ron Johnson Discipleship Podcast.
Where every week we have absolutely more fun than we deserve. But hey, we keep doing it every week. I'm not guilty. Are you guilty?
No,
not guilty. I'm not guilty. Let's just have more fun today than we deserve. We've been having more fun in the last week than we deserve. My goodness, the Lord is moving here in the house. Had our record-setting weekend with our ladies at the women's encounter, about 170 ladies, plus about 40 leaders. Amazing testimonies about what God's doing. And then, of course, we just had a dear friend, Ivan Tate, in town, and just he's leaving, in fact, just this morning. So a powerful weekend of ministry, record-setting attendance as well. We are ramping up to Easter, which, as you guys know, is only a few weeks away, and we are having Easter numbers and Easter problems. I understand our parking. We need to pray that, like the five loaves and the fish, and that God would multiply them and multiply our parking spots.
We're going to start the Livingstone's carpool ministry systems.
Yeah.
People talk about the bus system. Like, I don't know if we can go back to the busing people thing. Maybe we'll just have people do carpools.
I've seen a lot of like free market entrepreneurial ideas, like people in our neighborhood with, you can park in my driveway for $5 or $10. Maybe we should approach them with that.
Easier walk to the church, you know, $5 every Sunday parking.
But back to Easter, we're going to be kicking off a series starting this week. I announced that I'm officially coming out of retirement.
Nice. Michael Jordan, come back for your second three rings.
Michael Jordan.
Get out. Stop playing baseball and get back into it.
The only thing I got in common with Michael Jordan is the lack of hairy follicles on my head. That's all I got. But yeah, Easter schedule. We're doing two Good Friday services on Friday, March 29th, 4 o'clock and 6 o'clock. And then we're doing two Saturday services on March the 30th, also 4 o'clock and 6 o'clock. And then Sunday, instead of our normal three services, we're gonna streamline that down to two services as well. That'll be Sunday, March 31st, 9 o'clock and 11 o'clock. So six services, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. All wrapping up the series that we're starting called The Champion, which is going to be really, really good. I'm excited about that. We're going to be
The Champion. So you are going to talk about Michael Jordan.
Well, yeah. like I said, the name
different
and the
champion.
Heritage is all
yeah.
I got. But
different
maybe
champion.
I'll break out my old Bulls jersey or something for that. No, but of course, Jesus is our champion, yeah. And Resurrection Sunday is a great time to celebrate all of that. So we're going to be in Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 and 2 for the next 5 weeks. So it's going to be really, really good.
Super encouraging passage, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Let's pick up where we left off. Again, a lot of good feedback. Thank you guys for that are watching. Thanks for talking to us and getting Pastor Andrew and I up to date on what you've been listening to and how it's been helpful. I think this series is really, really good because it gives us kind of a big picture as to how America has been sliding away so fast, like rapid deterioration. Of course, we could look at the gradual roots we have in previous podcasts, previous books we've talked about, but in the last, I would say, decade, the deterioration has picked up, I think, in a rapid pace, and I think Jonathan Kahn does a remarkable job of kind of giving us the spiritual warfare aspects behind all that. But we've been talking about the Enchantress. This is person number two in Jonathan Kahn's Dark Trinity. And we talked about Baal in the preceding weeks. Reintroduce our audience to Baal before we get into the Enchantress today.
Yeah, the Baal, the god of, well, the demonic presence of Baal, seems like it's kind of like the first, it's like the vanguard of the attack. You know, it really corrodes the aspect of wealth and prosperity, which, you know, prosperity and wealth by itself is not bad, but there's a corruption to that when you start worshiping the prosperity, you start worshiping the wealth, that leaves open doors to all these other demonic presence. So the presence of Baal has been seen throughout all kind of cultures, all kind of nationalities. Started with, you know, the god Baal in the Middle East, where all these different people surround the Israelites. And Jonathan Cahn talks about going to the Roman Empire, being represented by the god Zeus or Jupiter,
right.
And now the representations even in New York City with the bull market, you know,
right?
The bull is the symbol of Baal,
right? And you know, Baal's job is to invert things. So if God says this is good and this is evil, then Baal comes in and says, "No, did God really say that? Actually, this is evil is good and good is evil." And he erases boundaries and he really attacks the law of God. And we've seen that again for decades now in America, the gradual erosion where we've turned our back on the clear, revealed will of God in the Scripture, with the thus saith the Lord, the Ten Commandments, the moral code that we've operated from in Western Civ, right, for all these years. That's really been the foundation of our greatness in so many ways. And all of that's been gradually erased. So that's all the work of Baal, and we highlighted that. But now we've been talking about his mistress or his wife or consort, the enchantress spirit, the spirit of seduction, Ishtar or Ashtoreth, as she's mentioned in the Bible. And what Jonathan Cahn asks is, if that spirit were to return to America, how would she find entry? And so he goes back, as he does with each of these, he goes back to the Old Testament template. We go back to use Israel as an example. And let's talk about that for a little bit, because we see, after a powerful deliverance from Egypt, which was incredible, God dealing with every demonic god in the Egyptian pantheon of gods, the children of Israel begin to move into the promised land. And of course, the promised land was a land where the promise was, you're going to have a land of milk and honey. You're going to live in houses you didn't build. You're going to enjoy a vineyard you didn't plant. You know, God was setting them up for incredible blessing, but he also warned them. He said, you know, do not embrace the gods of the nations around you, and do not forget where this blessing came from. It's coming from the Lord. And so, as we see, though, and this is the tragedy of the Old Testament record, it doesn't take long for Israel to go from a place of great freedom and blessing and prosperity to a place of absolute depravity and slavery as they begin to embrace the gods around them. So read that first passage. In fact, one of the earliest passages in the Bible is in the book of Judges, where we encounter Baal and his consort here.
Yeah, they abandoned the Lord to serve Baal and the images of Ashtoreth.
Okay, that's in Judges chapter 2. So from the very start, we see these false gods paired together, Baal and Ashtoreth, or in some cultures, Ishtar. We read again a couple chapters later, Judges chapter 10, verse 6. Again, the Israelites did evil in the Lord's sight. They served the images of Baal and Ashtoreth, the gods of Aram, Sidon, Moab, Ammon, and Philistia. They abandoned the Lord, and they no longer served him at all. And that's that spirit of Baal that you alluded to. It's a spirit of apostasy. It's a spirit that causes you to turn completely away from God and being faithful to God, to turn your back completely on his laws, on his ways, on his commandments. And that's what Israel does here. They abandon the Lord. They no longer serve him at all. They do evil in the sight of the Lord. But we see that powerful pairing again of Baal and Ashtoreth all through the Old Testament. And Jonathan Cahn says this. He says, you know, what is this Baal-Ashtoreth connection? And I'm quoting from him. He says, Baal represented the nations turning away from God and to the physical, the material, the carnal, and the sensual. It was that that opened the door for the entrance of Ashtoreth or Ishtar with its unbridled sexuality, licentiousness, and decadence. So let's talk about the connection there. What, you know, you're talking about almost like a military template or plan. How does Baal pave the way for Ashtoreth?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, it almost seems like this is a strategic plan. You first send in Baal to kind of wear people down. You know, you can't defeat the people through Baal first, but you soften them enough for them to be weary, for there's enough doubt to say, is that, did God really say that? Yep. Like these boundaries we have in place, what is right and what is wrong, is that really true?
Well, and God has spoken in the area of sexuality. So that's part of the area where God has placed some fences. And of course, we understand as believers, those fences are in place for our protection and our good. God invents sexuality, invents the pleasure and the blessing of sexuality, the purpose of sexuality. And then in the scripture, he tells us, you know, all of that is to be reserved for a covenant committed relationship between a husband and a wife. And so that's part of the spoken law of God, the commandment of God that he gives for our blessing. But of course, Baal says, you know, like you pointed out, did God really mean that? And he begins to erase those lines. And you can't have a culture that's steeped in licentiousness and sexual perversion unless you first of all start erasing a whole bunch of lines and a whole bunch of removing a whole bunch of commandments from God and ignoring them.
And I think another thing that came to my mind is how it kind of opens up with prosperity and great wealth. Yeah. Now, I'm not here to knock prosperity and great wealth. I think that's a great tool used by God. But I mean, how many stories you hear about like ball players who, you know, they might have such a great upbringing, they have great, you know, parents, and then they get into some type of professional league, and you hear that this is their own story, and from great wealth, from great prosperity, awesome comes great seduction. It's like a natural natural ending to follow up to that great prosperity. All of a sudden, they're driving super nice cars, and then drugs and sex and alcohol, all this stuff jumps in, and the next thing you know, they're into a different person.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the common thread through all that is the flesh, you know, carnality, you know, comfort or and pleasure for pleasure's sake, to where we, as you said, because we have wealth, we're able to, we don't have to work as hard and we don't have to pray as hard. We don't face the challenges maybe that we used to face. I mean, think about the children of Israel moving into the promised land. They went from being slaves to being incredibly wealthy. They plundered all of Egypt due to the favor of God. They went from having nothing to having everything. And it's very easy when you get in those kinds of situations. And we've all experienced that to some degree, right? When things are going good, you're just chilling out. And that's when, you know, kind of like David, when he's chilling out, you know, on the top of the of the kingdom there. And all of a sudden, because he's in a place of leisure and relaxation, he's not out at war. He ends up falling right into a trap, you know, with Bathsheba. So I think spiritually, those two things that you pointed out go together. The apostasy spirit that's fueled by fertility, blessing, you know, prosperity, success, going hand in glove with sexual perversion, whether it's pornography or adultery, fornication, all of the things that the Lord has clearly spoken about. But and you know, you mentioned as well with the whole alcohol. We talked last week. Ishtar or Ashtoreth is the patron goddess of the tavern, and so again, when guys are eat, drink, and be merry, right? And you do that into excess, it's very easy to fall into sexual sin at the same time. Yep. So we see these two going hand in glove. And then he mentions about Ishtar coming to America, and I think this is important. He marks, I guess, the sexual revolution, of course, coming out of the 1960s, which talk about a time of strong Baal and Ashtoreth connection. The 60s was where everybody was saying, don't trust authority, basically, you know, go against every social convention. It was a shock and awe time. You know, people were doing things openly that would cause other people to be appalled because it was just completely countercultural. It was almost like we're going to push the envelope just to get a rise out of you. You know, we're going to see how far we can push this thing just to stir things up. But it was rooted in rebelliousness, lawlessness, and almost in anything goes kind of licentiousness as well. So that was that was the 60s. And he said that was, again, when Baal entered. And he asked the question, we would then expect that this would be followed by the entrance of Ashtoreth. And what would happen in the wake of that entrance? We should expect a transformation that would begin to alter the realm of sexuality, which is exactly what we saw. With the goddess's entrance, we would expect biblical standards and ethics surrounding sexuality and marriage to begin to erode. we would expect the moral foundations and the values that had undergirded Western civilization for nearly 2,000 years to begin overturning. He says, in short, we would expect to see the evidence of a sexual revolution. And that is exactly what happened. With the rebellion came the full entrance of every kind of sexual perversion, you know, imaginable. He talks about Ishtar and the sexual revolution here. He said there had been another sexual revolution that took place in the Greco-Roman world with the arrival of Christianity, and it was a revolution where biblical sexual ethics, ideals, and morality replaced those of the pagan world. Let's talk about that a little bit because, you know, the principle we're going back to here was there in the scriptures that talks about the demonic spirit being cast out of a person, and then that spirit's not content to be basically be living in no man's land. Mm-hmm. That spirit's looking for a person to inhabit, and so he goes back to the place where he was first rejected or kicked mm-hmm. out. And if that door is open, then he brings in seven of his friends. And so Jonathan Cahn applies this to the cultural level. Mm-hmm. And so let's talk a little bit about how was Ashtoreth, you know, ejected from the Greco-Roman culture? Because that was a culture that was very perverse, you know, sexually.
Yeah, and how they treated women, how they treated children. Whereas when Christianity came, everyone was elevated. The lives of children, of babies and infants were elevated. You know?
And explain all of that, because I think the institution of marriage and the protection of, you know, sexuality within that covenant provided a safety net for women in their role to be elevated and for children to be valued and appreciated. That was the teaching of the gospel. And you can imagine Paul, you know, like in Corinthians, for instance, the Corinthian culture was very much a culture influenced by Baal and Ashtoreth. And Paul comes along and says, flee sexual immorality, you know, like the plague, where he says, basically, if you're practicing these behaviors, you will not inherit the kingdom of God. I mean, this was radically countercultural, and I'm sure the message was you know, received like, are you kidding me? Are you out of your mind? Yeah. Even the Christians were like, what? Because, again, it was not uncommon for a man to be married, but for a man to have a mistress. And then you go to your temple, and you have temple prostitutes because it's all mixed together. Your worship is sexualized. Your mistress is there for your sexualization, and your wife's there just to sire some kids, you know?
But look at the example when he was calling out the church because they were allowing sexual immorality to happen within their congregations. And he's like, cast that brother out until he repents. I mean, you know, in our context, when we read it today, it's like, yeah, of course you would do that. But in that context, it's like huge. It's Paul, you're asking us to do what?
Or how about Paul actually says that for Christians with other Christians who are living a sexual immorality, he says, have nothing to do with them. In other words, break fellowship with them. So the radical standard of sexual purity was a shocker to the ancient world, but that's exactly what Christ preached. And he called, and this was a radical thing. Not only did he call women to walk in sexual purity, he held men to the same standard. And of course, there has always been a double standard in every culture throughout history. What women were not allowed to do, we kind of turned our eyes with the men. I think of Jesus with the woman caught in adultery, right? All the guys were getting ready to stone her. Of course, we don't have any story about the guy that she was having adultery with. So it was completely one-sided again. But Jesus just absolutely balances the truth that it applies to all of us. But the point being, when the gospel came, we got rid of the temple prostitutes. We got rid of taking children that were unwanted and leaving them on the outskirts of the city, basically infanticide. The homosexual culture and everything that was such a huge part of the Greco-Roman culture, all of this was radically transformed by the power of Jesus and the gospel. And so,
polygamy.
Yeah, there. Good point. Polygamy. So we have marriage, and the standard is sexual purity before marriage, and then sexual purity after marriage. So he says here the casting out of the gods included the casting out of the Roman Venus, the Greek Aphrodite, the Phoenician Astarte, and the Mesopotamian Ishtar, all the varied manifestations of the goddess of sexuality. And it was in the goddess's departure that biblical values replaced pagan ones, and the first sexual revolution took place. So we often talk about the 60s as a sexual revolution, but I like what he points out. The first massive sexual revolution that took place on planet Earth was as a result of the preaching of the gospel.
Yeah.
That's what revolution, in fact, what's coming back is not, what we're experiencing today is not new. This is very old. It is a comeback of the old pagan kind of understanding of sexuality that was driven out. So we had a sexual revolution that was birthed by Jesus Christ, and now we're seeing, again, the resurgence of paganism in America. And as this book points out, and that was interesting to me, so much of what we see today that seems so avant-garde, cutting edge, is not avant-garde or cutting edge at all. It's like old school, like yawn, like the devil's been around a long time.
And you think back on those civilizations for a second, like the ancient Philistia.
Yeah.
Is that really where you want your kids to grow up in?
Oh, yeah.
You know, because you look at these, like you said, these, cutting edge, new things and new expressions. You're like, oh, so cool. It's the next progression of the human evolution and blah, blah, blah. But you think about these ancient world, they were cruel, dark places that is not humane. They don't care about people. You know, people are harsh and they go to war all the time. I mean, is that really the world you
taking
want?
Taking captives, slaves.
Right.
Raping and pillaging that's taking place everywhere, the abuse of children, neglect of children. I mean, like you said, it was a dark, demonized place, and there's nothing romantic, awesome, cool about paganism. It's disgusting.
Yeah, it's might means right.
Yeah.
It's like you like your neighbor stuff. You get a bigger army. Yeah, you go and conquer, and like that's not like this is where deception is. It's like, oh, there's some lore and part of all of this, but let's look at the whole picture. Do you really want this whole thing? We don't. We don't want that because even history has shown us we don't want that.
You know, I remember when ISIS was you know, doing their demonic stuff, right? And there were girls in America who were converting over to join the ISIS cause, and you're sitting there looking like, honey, what part of your brain is not working? Do you know what they're going to do to you? Do you know how they're going to treat you? Like, who would convert to that when they have such a low, twisted, you know, perverted view of women and a low, twisted, perverted view of sexuality. So you're exactly right. I mean, there's nothing romantic or cool or satisfying about going back to paganism and paganistic beliefs. And maybe our job in the church is to trumpet these things.
I don't think
a little
people understand that. I think people think paganism is like a very romantic, it's unrestrained. It's, again, like I'm not a big scholar on paganism, but from what I've read, like those society are not things I want to raise my kids. It's very simple. I don't want to live in that neighborhood.
Yeah. Well, we talked about it even back in the days when we were talking about Nazi Germany. It was very much a return to paganism, the worshiping of Mother Nature, basically the earth, demonic spirits, full moons, all the witchcraft and occultic type of things that were going on.
Yeah.
Anyway. That didn't end so well either, as we know.
Well, I just look at some of our major cities, and because a lot of our major cities are acting like paganistic cultures.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
What's going on in those cities? Are people moving city or moving out?
So much of what's going on behind the Green Movement is rooted in paganism. It's the worship of Mother Nature and all of that. So he says here, the sexual revolution was another dimension of the paganization of America and the Western Civ. And what was branded as the new morality was actually an old morality, an ancient morality, the morality of the gods. So he says, we would have to work incrementally, step by step, and progressively, but it was the spirit of Ishtar. And to Ishtar especially belong the powers of seductions and spells. So in recasting her ancient spell, she would begin the seduction of America in the modern world. And so, you know, again, we look back at the gradual erosion. We'll get into that in our next podcast. But the gradual erosion of social mores, what's expected, what's not, what's taught, what's not, even what's taught in our schools, Hollywood, all of culture was basically singing off the same sheet, prior to the 1960s and the sexual revolution that came back. But we've just gradually seen this erosion of all of that to where, as you said, almost anything goes now. The only issue today that separates good sexual behavior from bad sexual behavior is this mysterious thing called consent. Right? If someone's consenting to it, it's okay. But if someone's not consenting, then that's the cardinal rule. It's the whole pro-choice thing, right? If I'm agreeing to it, then who are you to tell me that anything's wrong? But if I'm not agreeing to it, then all of a sudden it's wrong because I'm the arbiter, the final arbiter of truth. So it's just interesting that we're in a place today where we find it hard to make any kind of moral judgment about anything sexual. Usually the answer is, well, who are you to try to impose your view on what I want to do or what makes me feel good or how I want to express myself sexually? But we've come a long way to get to that place. And there's been a lot of erosion and a lot of, back to Baal, there's been a lot of fences kicked down to get to where we could actually function somewhat in this kind of arena. Of course, what's happening now, and I find this to be interesting, you cannot live a lie for any length of time without it eventually being exposed as hypocritical. And so we've got all this crazy stuff happening now sexually, and you've actually got those camps almost cannibalizing each other because at some point somebody's belief now goes against the other person's belief, or somebody's relativism collides with somebody else's relativism, and eventually the whole system comes crashing down. I thought that, like, for instance, the Me Too, you know, movement a while back was interesting, but nobody's saying anything about, like the Jeffrey Epstein. No one's saying anything about some of the other abusive types of sexual things happening in our culture. Like their voices are silent. Like, where's the feminists today? They were screaming so loud about certain things back in the day, and now they're almost silent. And so it's just interesting, as you continue to devolve and paganize and cannibalize yourself sexually, you end up with nothing but a mess. And I feel like that's kind of where we're at today, a big mess.
There's tons of little cultural skirmishes that, like, I look at it, I'm like, I don't agree with both sides, but you guys really don't like each other. Like, I'm just like, it's no longer like the conservative versus liberal. It's like two basically liberal-leaning factions going at each other on so many different entertainment, all these different fronts, which I'm just like, wow. Like, exactly what you said, it's because there's no overarching sense of truth, and everyone's seeking their own source of truth, and it just costs, I mean, just, it's very, very disunifying,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
I'm just staying out of it. I have no opinion. I mean, I do opinions, but you guys don't want to hear it. So,
well, it is a time. I mean, obviously, this is a time for us to be communicating truth, as always. But it's just sad to see the pain and suffering that people are going through because of the loss of biblical sanity on these issues.
Well, I'll just give you one example. Like J.K. Rowling's,
yeah,
came out as. She's I think she's like considered a feminist, and people attack her because she's a feminist. This is my understanding, at least. Don't quote me on the internet. she does not affirm the trans movement.
Yeah.
So there's all this canceling. I'm just like, wow. Like like you said, it's because who's there? Who's to say what is right and what's wrong? And they're just like arguing back and forth with each other. And I'm looking, I'm like, well, I guess in this case, I agree with J.K. Rowling a little more, which in general, you wouldn't say I would have a lot of agreement with her.
Yeah, well, to use that phrase, we're finding ourselves with strange bedfellows, you know.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be seeing yourself aligning with leftists, liberals, whatever, Democrats on certain things, but it's like, wow, you go against the code, the new sexual code of morality, right? And you're going to pay for it.
And there's that kind of stuff all over, and it's just very interesting to me.
Yeah. There is a lot of pushback now. We don't have time to get into it, but I've been seeing a lot of pro-family legislation passed. Of course, we saw all kinds of craziness exposed, what they were teaching kids, open pornography in some of these books that are produced again by Planned Parenthood and all these, quote, sex ed books. Now parents are starting to see it. There's more transparency. They're raising a stink about these things. And a lot of legislatures are passing, you know, laws now that are supporting parental rights. We've seen some terrible trampling of parental rights, kids taken out of your home, usually over sexual issues, you know, sexual identity issues, these types of things. So I think, again, what the devil always overplays his hand. You know, it's one thing to promote, you know, say sex outside of marriage as cool or whatever. But when you're start talking about changing your child's gender and mutilating their genitalia or turning a man into a woman or whatever, as we're going to see Ishtar, that's exactly what she's about. You know, now we're starting to push on the fringe of things. And even people who might have been with you all along saying amen, when you get to that point, they're like, whoa, let's tap the brakes here a little bit. And I think we're swinging back again to some sanity, and I'm encouraged by that. So anyway, we're not going off the cliff completely, and it is a great chance to speak the truth. So anyway, we're going to continue in our next podcast to talk about the great seduction in America and what that looked like. I think there are many of our listeners who are old enough to remember back to the day what TV was like, say, pre-1960s, mm-hmm. what the standards were for movies and so forth. So anyway, we're going to see Ishtar's work, Astra's work, and our culture over the last, you know, 50 or 60 years and be able to highlight where we are today. So anyway, thanks so much for tuning in. Please tell your friends, let us know, let them know about what we're doing. We'd love to have you guys join us on these podcasts. Every Thursday morning they release, so we look forward to seeing you next Thursday. Have a good week.